There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome. It's a brand new week and you're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
We're a day away from Halloween. How exciting is that?
Well, to me, not exciting. Here's why. I don't really have much of a costume. It's just a hefty bag that I put around my body and I go as somebody's lawn clippings.
Well, that's good. That's a good costume. It's something different. You don't see everybody else doing it, Tim.
Well, no, Dave, because here's the thing. People just kind of open up my little string and they dump their lawn clippings inside me.
Well, don't.
I never get candy.
Don't let them do that. You see, you just hold out the bag and you say trick or treat, and they put the candy in the bag, Tim.
No, that's when they put the lawn clippings in.
No, you don't open up your bag, Tim. See, there you carry a separate bag.
Oh.
And then you just, you know, you hold it out. Here, look. See what I'm doing? You hold the bag out in front like this, and then you say trick or treat. Okay? And then they take the candy or lawn clippings and put it in that bag.
Oh.
Not in your outfit.
Not in this.
No.
Well, I thought because it was such a big bag that I'd get more candy.
No. You're just, plus, let's face it.
Plus, it's cold outside and I keep the candy warm when it's next to my body.
But then it's going
to
get all melty and gross.
It's better that way.
No, it's disgusting. You're horrible.
It's easier to chew.
All right, Timothy, let us begin in the world of supernatural news. A little later, we've got some parashare stories, but where shall we begin this week in the world of the strange?
Well, it's going to get strangier right away, Dave. We start with Sweat and Blood.
What?
Sweat and Blood, Dave. And
wasn't
not
that
like
a 70s band?
No, that was Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So we're just short some tears.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's the one thing missing here. A 21-year-old woman has been sweating blood from her face and the palms of her hands when she feels stressed or exercises, and even when she sleeps in the bizarre case that has baffled doctors. This isn't Sweating to the Oldies with Richard Simmons, Dave. No. This is an entirely different thing altogether.
This is like Sweating to the Messiah, Tim. When you're getting blood pouring off your forehead and palms, that's stigmata, son.
That's right. That's what kind of exercise program could you make out of stigmata? That's that'd be kind of interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. A 21-year-old woman was admitted to a hospital with an extremely rare condition that causes her to sweat blood from her face and the palms of her hands. Italian doctors were left puzzled after the unnamed patient appeared with the bizarre symptoms, despite not showing any signs of skin lesions. Medics said there was no obvious trigger for the spontaneous bleeding, which is the name of my new band, Dave.
Are we sure this isn't like that spray-on tan? And maybe as she's working up lather, it just starts running?
Just could going that too be far? Yeah, like an extra, like a blood orange shade.
Right. I wonder if that's what's going on.
That probably is it.
The medics would probably know that, though.
They would, I would think. Unless they were, you know, kind of freaked out. We are close to Halloween.
Very well could be.
Yeah. The medics said there was no obvious trigger for the spontaneous bleeding, which could happen while she slept or carried out physical activity. Her bleeding was most intense when she felt stressed. It was reported in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, or CMAJ, as the kids are calling it, Dave. I don't know if you know that or not. Doctors in Florence report that the patient had suffered the unusual symptoms for the past 3 years, and episodes last between 1 and 5 minutes. Can you imagine sweating blood for 5 minutes?
I got to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. When I used to go to the gym, part of the attraction was the glistening of women that were working out. I thought that was hot. I really did. You just see a sweaty woman just working out, and she's just into her workout, and they kind of take on this like almost otherworldly sheen to them. But now if blood starts pouring, I don't know if I'm going to find that. What if I do? I might find that alluringly sexy, Tim.
Blood?
I might.
Sweat
I don't
and
know.
Blood?
You know why? Because like Halloween's right here.
You had a thing during Carrie, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I did. Yeah. And here's my thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
I am obviously a broken human being, or because of my reproductive glands, Tim, been created to just procreate on every planet. Because when you see women dressed up for Halloween and they're zombies or they're aliens,
okay,
it still turns my crank.
You got a little Captain Kirk syndrome going on.
I think so. It's not like, you know, you look at and you're like, oh, there's no way. Mm. I look at him and I'm like, kind of like the leopard spots.
Might try that out for a spin.
No, I don't because, you know, I'm happily engaged.
Oh, I see.
But if my gal were to dress up as a Klingon or a cheerleader or a cheerleading Klingon, either way, it's a win-win for me, Tim. Mm. But if she starts bleeding blood, I don't know. But yeah, I think I do know.
I think you do.
I think it'd be pretty hot either
I think
way.
We all do, yeah.
Well, that'd be kind of weird, wouldn't it?
A cheerleading Klingon? I'm trying to get that out of my head, actually.
A cheerleading Klingon sweat and blood, that'd be kind of freaky.
Yeah,
or
that,
would it?
I
might be kind of hot.
No,
I'm
going to
see if
all.
I can talk her into it. It's Good time for Lord. Role-playing at home. I'm going to put on my Captain Kirk uniform, my loose-fitting wig.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yikes. Let's see if I can get her to knock the toop off, if you know what I mean.
Oh, jeez. Well, I did bring lunch with me today.
Yep. You're about to toss it, aren't you?
Yep.
Okay.
Hmm.
We're in the middle of a story.
We are.
So this chick's bleeding blood or sweating blood.
She's sweating to the oldies.
Sweating blood.
Yeah. Hematohidrosis. That's what it is. That's the rare condition she has. It gives the illusion that sufferers are sweating blood from unbroken skin. It may occur due to expansion and rupturing of blood vessels beneath the skin at times of stress.
Uh-huh.
Sufferers may experience weakness and mild dehydration from the blood loss. Unfortunately, there's no cure. Drugs known as beta blockers, you may remember those from the popular drug or the diet craze, not drug craze, may help to ease the condition, possibly by minimizing patients' stress and anxiety. Hematohidrosis exact prevalence is unknown, but may be as little as 1 in 10 million people.
So it's enough.
Pretty rare.
Do you think it's you know, if she was dating a vampire, she'd be in a bad place.
Oh, boy, would
she? You start working up a little lather and you start bleeding from the forehead and the palms.
Yikes.
You are just like, you're a buffet line for a vampire.
Boy, are you. Yeah.
Sparklier or not. But I have the same strange affliction. I get these weird stigmata spots on my palms and on my head where I get the it just starts chapping up and cracking open and bleeding. So I don't want to say I might be the next Messiah, Tim, but there's a pretty good chance I could be the next Messiah.
I had a hole in my foot.
You might want to treat me a little nicer going forward. That's all I'm saying.
I had a hole in my foot for 9 months, that bled constantly, but nobody came up and asked me to make loaves and fishes. Just saying.
Especially not with a bloody foot, Tim.
Well,
it's not as sexy as you think it is.
I could have kicked a bloody football a good way.
I guess.
I'll let you know that. The woman reportedly has become depressed and socially isolated because of her condition. Yeah. Doctors ruled out
if I were a single guy, I'd give her my number, Tim.
You'd say, hey, I'll make you sweat some blood, sweetheart.
That's right.
Yeah. The woman is reportedly depressed, socially isolated. Doctors have ruled out that she wasn't faking it, and tests revealed her blood count and blood clotting functions are normal. They eventually diagnosed her with hematohidrosis, which is thought to affect just 1 in 10 million people. She was treated with propranolol. I can't even pronounce half of my medications,
Again,
let alone
if you
hers.
Just power through, you'll do better.
A beta blocker medication, which substantially reduced her symptoms but has not completely stopped them. It's so rare that many people, including doctors, don't know it exists or if it's real. Canadian medical historian and hematologist Jacqueline Duffin, who wrote a commentary that accompanies the journal article, revealed that she was at first skeptical but suspected the Italian doctors had been duped. But after exhaustively examining the medical literature, she changed her view. Not much is known about its cause, but it's thought to be a result of extreme stress or fear. According to a study published in the Indian Journal of Dermatology, lots of doctors subscribe to it, the many blood vessels which surround the sweat gland constrict or narrow under the pressure of stress. As the anxiety increases, the blood vessels dilate to the point of rupture, and then the blood goes into the sweat glands, which push it along with sweat to the surface, presenting as droplets of blood mixed with sweat. There you go.
Wow. Yeah. So it looks like she's like gone a couple rounds.
Oh, yes.
With Rocky Balboa.
A little bit.
You come down here to throw hands with me. All right, where
that
are we
too.
Going
I
next?
Don't even know what you said there, but it sounded good. We go to Yorkshire, where an ordinary-looking semi, that's what it says, is this ordinary-looking Yorkshire semi the most haunted house in the UK? Why would a semi look like a house, Dave?
I don't know. That might be like slang, like English slang for a kind of house.
Don't they know that a semi is a truck?
Not over there, Tim.
They're funny over there. Mm-hmm. Ghost hunters hear spooky noises and get scratched during a terrifying stay. It'd be our friends Nick Gross and
like
Katrina
that?
Weidman.
Oh, yeah. Well, you should call Katrina and find out what a semi is.
Yeah, she won't take my calls anymore, Dave. I think there's a restraining order. I'm not sure.
Understandable.
I shouldn't have called her so many times.
Yeah, you should have stopped making me dress up like her all the time sit across
from
me.
Was that weird for you?
A little weird.
It wasn't for me. Well, no. Your Klingon is my making you dress up like Katrina. They're weird.
You bought me ribs. I don't care. I'll dress up as whatever you want me to for a good slab of ribs.
Too. Well, there's a couple coming your way.
So. Okay.
So Nick and Katrina spent 100 chilling hours locked inside the Black Monk of Pontefract's house in an attempt to track down an infamous spirit believed to be responsible for a series of unexplained happenings in the 1960s. It moved on me. A pair of, that's the chilling part of this story. A pair of ghost hunters told how they heard noises and got viciously scratched during a terrifying night stay at one of the most haunted houses in Britain. Nick and Katrina paid a visit to the Black Monk of Pontefract at number 30 East Drive in Yorkshire in an attempt to track down a spirit believed to be responsible for a series of unexplained events in the 1960s. The brave pair spent 100 hours locked inside the spooky pad for their show Paranormal Lockdown, during which their specialist equipment picked up evidence of ghostly goings-on, voices, and a ghoul who spoke to them in a foreign language. Well, how did they understand it if it was a foreign language?
Well, you know, if I started going, you'd say, wow, that sounds like a foreign language.
I'd try to type it in Google Translate.
Yeah, it would come up as, hey, pass the ribs.
Oh,
yeah.
And then they wouldn't get any because they're dead. I'd eat them all. Katrina even claimed she was scratched by a violent ghost while Nick was woken in the middle of the night by a door, which he said slammed shut by itself. And then he crapped himself.
Sound effect tube right there.
Yeah, well, it was good. We spent more money this quarter on sound effects. The semi-detached house was built on an old battleground where dozens of soldiers were once slain. Nick, who has been ghost hunting for 10 years, said he was drawn to the Yorkshire pad by a ghoul that was haunting him at his American home. Ooh, it's a transatlantic haunting.
Yes.
Yeah. He recorded a spirit murmuring the words Pontefract, and he claimed he wouldn't have had peace until he paid a visit to the home, which he dubbed one of the scariest places he's ever investigated. He told Female, that's F-E-M-A-I-L, right when we stepped on the property, it felt different. There's an energy about it. That's what we were told first off. There were so many battles, there were executions, and there was so much death on that soil. When you take a step into that location, it's haunting. It really is. Without anything really even occurring, you just feel it. You feel the energy in the sense that something is there lurking in the shadows. Nick said he was woken by a loud banging sound, and their high-resolution cameras picked up a solid figure moving past one of the doors. He added, my co-host Katrina, she got scratched too at one point. I have salve for that, by the way, if she needs any. I can call her and let her know if she'll pick up the phone.
9, beep, 1, beep, 1.
No, that's a number. That's not the number. So it got really scary, Nick claimed. Is that how it rings over there?
In England, yeah.
Do they have 911 over there?
No, actually, I think it's 999, I think.
Oh, dear Lord. I'll have to get rid of all the nines of the phones over there.
Remember, that's the sound of the ringing phone from the right. Pink Floyd album. Remember that?
Yeah, I'm
familiar. Have a call for Mr. Floyd?
So it got really scary, Nick said, as it escalated through our investigation of 100 hours. Nick said anyone would have been startled by the goings-on in the scary dark home. The house is now owned by film producer Bill Bungay, who purchased it to push his film based on the historical hauntings when the lights went out. The previous family that lived there, the Pritchards, thought they had a friendly ghost whom they called Fred. But in 1966, when ghost hunters and mediums began visiting the house, Fred is believed to have turned on the family. That's never a good thing. One recorded incident allegedly saw their daughter Diana get dragged upstairs by an invisible hand. Eventually, the family became so scared that they moved out of the home after performing an exorcism to try and get rid of those restless spirits. The house was investigated for the Halloween special of Most Haunted in 2015 and remains open for bookings. However, Ouija boards and exorcisms are banned. Those are two things you shouldn't bring there. Mm. Number 30 East Drive has captured the attention of the press recently as an apparent photo of the monk was captured last year. And earlier this year, Pete Bolton and Rob Hughes from Ghost Inspectors Paranormal Group snapped an eerie face in a black hooded robe staring out of a mirror at the bottom of the stairs. There you go.
Mm.
Yeah. So, Katrina, call me if you need help with that wound. I'm around. Just saying. That's not my number. I would have Dave give you the number, but we don't do that on the air. So
that's right.
I'll just PM me.
612.
No, no, what? No.
All right.
PM me. She knows where I am.
She knows where you are at all times.
That's right.
All right.
I have a little bracelet on my
hand. Where are we going next, sir?
We go to a story that says that Americans believe in ghosts, ancient aliens, and Atlantis, but not Bigfoot. Although our numbers would tell you otherwise.
That's
if
right.
if you look at our numbers for the show, evidently a lot of you believe in Bigfoot and like to hear about it.
Or they're just fascinated by it.
Yeah, they're fascinated either way. Americans are into freaky stuff. That is our no-duh statement of the day, at least when it comes to the unexplained and supernatural, a new study from Chapman University reveals. The vast majority of Americans believe in some kind of paranormal activity, nearly 3 in every 4 people the study finds, but most believe in more than one phenomenon.
Do, 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 do.
I said phenomenon, Dave.
Do, 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 do.
It's phenomenon, Dave. Researchers identified 7 different paranormal phenomena. And asked respondents whether they agreed with statements like places can be haunted by spirits and aliens have visited Earth in our ancient past. The most common belief among Americans is that ancient advanced civilizations like the lost city of Atlantis once existed. Ask 2 people if they believe in Atlantis and at least one of them will probably say yes. The other most common belief is...
Wait a minute. Tim, do you believe in Atlantis?
No.
Now you ask me.
Dave, do you believe in Atlantis?
No.
Nope.
So they've already blown that number right out.
Yep. Blown to hell.
Yep.
The other most common belief is in ghosts. More than half of Americans believe that places can be haunted by spirits. More people believe that aliens visited Earth in our early days, that being 35% of people, than believe that they are visiting us now, just 26%. The study also found through a separate study from Ipsos, that found that 8 in 10 people believe in life on other planets, and more than half believe that UFOs have visited Earth. So what were some of the things that Americans were most skeptical about? Well, turns out that Bigfoot is having a pretty rough go of it. Oh, poor Bigfoot. On the 50th anniversary of the most famous video of him of all, only 16% of Americans say they believe Bigfoot
is real. 16%?
16%
no kidding.
Say they believe that Bigfoot is real. I do believe. Not too many people believe in psychics or telekinesis, moving objects with the mind either. But if you ask, about 1 in 5 will still say that they think it's possible. So there's evidence. Or is there evidence for any of these beliefs? Mostly no. This is an upbeat article. Atlantis, for example, is widely accepted by researchers as nothing more than a fictional nation that the Greek philosopher Plato used to illustrate some of his arguments about power. And despite the fact that nearly everyone now carries a camera and recorder with them at all times through their phones, convincing evidence of ghosts hasn't appeared yet, according to Live Science magazine. As for psychics and telekinesis, the former magician James Randi offered a $1 million prize to anyone who could demonstrate psychic skills in a scientific setting. According to this article, nobody did, and hardly anyone even attempted it. We would, I think we'd probably disagree with that. Plenty of people have. Aliens are a little trickier, though there hasn't been much evidence of aliens actually visiting the Earth in UFO form. An exhaustive study in the 1960s of nearly 13,000 UFO sightings found no evidence of any of them being alien vessels. Some scientists believe that it's a statistical certainty that they exist. And Frank Drake, an astrophysicist and astronomer, even devised a formula for determining how many intelligent civilizations may exist in any given area of space. Still, we haven't found anything yet. And though ghosts and abductions and monsters are known for being spooky, and the data was collected as part of a study on American spheres, It turns out paranormal activity doesn't even come close to the top 10 or even top 50 of things that people are scared of the most. So you want to know what the you want to know what the number one fear is?
Spiders.
No.
Snakes.
No.
It don't take spiders and snakes.
I'll give you one more.
Heights.
Nope. Government corruption.
That exists, and it's prevalent everywhere.
Right.
So that's what they're fearful of.
That's, according to this, that's the number one fear of people.
People live in constant fear then, don't they?
Yep.
Huh.
And then they go on in the article about 13 different spooky superstitions, but that's a video that we won't play. But there you go. The government corruption, that's your number one fear. It doesn't seem that spooky to me. It's an everyday thing.
No, but I guess I understand the idea behind that. Because you want to believe that government is there to protect you. Even though you hear all these conspiracy theories, when it boils right down, you really don't want to believe that all that's true. And that's why I have a hard time with a lot of the conspiracy shows. They screw with my head a lot. And I need like months between them because I just don't want to live in the dark rabbit hole. It doesn't mean I'm being ignorant to it. But man, it can send me spiraling.
Well, there's a whole new thing that happened this past week with the Kennedy files that were released.
Yes.
Because President Trump was going to release the files. And then
just for people that don't understand this, this was the anniversary year that they were going to release all of the files. Mm-hmm. The only person literally on the planet that could stop or bar the release would be the President of the United States.
Right.
And being a longtime believer in the conspiracy to kill JFK, I mean, he came out and called Ted Cruz's dad one of the assassins.
Yeah.
And
he was standing right next to Oswald. Yeah.
Yeah. Never apologized, never recanted this. Mm-hmm. So it felt like this guy's going to come forward. He's going to push this paperwork through. Now, a couple of the alphabet agencies were telling him, yeah, you got to settle down. You realize there are some very delicate moments in this. Mm-hmm. And they're releasing, I think, like 2,000 of the pages. They're supposedly releasing it all, but they're doing part of it now and then part of it in April, I think, of 2018.
Yeah, because of they were supposed to lift all the redactions off of the stuff that was being held back.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're giving them this time until, I think, it's April of 2018 because they're afraid of exposing some agents that are still alive. And there's some other security risks that the alphabet agencies are saying you don't want to let this stuff go yet. So I don't know what the
stuff is. I wonder
if they've
informed him. Because here's the danger. And I'm not taking a political side here against or for Trump.
No, I'm not either.
But I believe, in a sense, he would be like, well, then you need to tell me what it is so I can make a clear decision on if this needs to be released. And if it's incendiary, I don't know that Trump can't keep quiet.
Yeah, me either.
I think he might expose it on his own.
See,
so it'll be interesting. And I don't know. It'll be interesting. Now, one thing that is fascinating, one of the documents that came out that's already being talked about pretty extensively is one of the early memos from J. Edgar Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
And he quickly tried to start this, we need to prove it's Oswald immediately. We need to just quell the concerns of the country and make sure that they know it was Oswald.
Yep.
So it could be one of two things. You get control quickly, show them we've got this taken care of, so we get the confidence of our country back. That could be it.
Yep.
You buy into the conspiracy angle and it's get them to believe this so that we can sweep the rest of this under the carpet quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's definitely one of those two versions of this story.
The thing that kills me is, I think President Trump has already seen a lot of this because if you saw the tweet right before they were about to release and then they changed their mind, he said something about to release these files and then so interesting with an exclamation point, which makes it seem like he's seen them already. He knows what's in them.
Well, he also is the kind of guy that wants you to believe he knows more than he does all the time.
And he hypes it up. But then, you know, if you're going to hype it up and kind of tease us and not throw it out there.
But then he can hide behind the bravado of, hey, this is to protect our country, but I've seen it. It's interesting.
Mm.
So, you know what I'm saying? And if they're really – see, I can't believe that there are any agents still out in the field from 54 years ago now.
No, I don't think it's agents that are out in the field, but I think it has to do with even political machinations that are still going on. And even allies and ties that we have going on right now that could be exposed or could be turned.
I know there was a big deal about something to do with Mexico involved, and they were afraid that that could really – but here's my thought. With as much as Trump hates Mexico and wants to put up that wall, if Mexico proved to be at this and he could use this to his disposal to prove that they were involved somehow in the assassination of a president – his wall will be built quickly.
No, I'm sure. Yeah.
I believe. So I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out. Now, next week, not even next week. This week, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be hosting the Tom Bernard Show Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week. And I believe on Thursday, Judith Vary Baker will join me in the mid-roll, I think around 1 p.m. Central. And Judith is the former lover of Lee Harvey Oswald. She's going to come on and talk to us about some of these documents that have been released. She's going to give you some insights to this case. If you haven't heard it on our show before, it is a fascinating case. It is probably one of my favorite episodes we've ever done because it was just amazing to sit there in front of this woman and hear a totally different perspective on history than I'd ever been kind of brought into before.
Yeah.
So Judith is going to join me on the Tom Bernard Show. You can find information at TomBernardShow.com. And listen to the show Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'm on from noon until 3 p.m. Central Time. And then I know their media agent who posts it all. I'm very tight with her, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it on good authority that those episodes will be up pretty quickly because the fiance is the one that does all that work for
really?
Tom. So
well.
She'll have those episodes up, and I'll make sure we point people to them so they can hear what's going to be going on.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Also on Tom Bernard Show on Halloween tomorrow, Tim, I will be his guest, but I'm bringing along with me Carmen Reed from The Haunting in Connecticut.
All right.
Karen Smurl from The Smurl Haunting.
Oh.
And Andrea Perrin from The Conjuring. We're going to talk to each one of them, one an hour, for about 20 minutes and hear a little bit of their stories and some of the most impactful aspects of their stories, the scariest moments and the reality versus the Hollywood hype. So we're going to do that on the Tom Bernard Show tomorrow.
That's a heck of a guest list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I kind of pull little strings. I wanted to impress Tom and show him, you know, I know some people when it comes to Halloween. When you're going to call on the Halloween King, that's my newly christened name that I've given myself, Tim.
Do you wear a jack-o'-lantern for a head?
No. Oh, no. Okay. I know I'm going to piss a lot of people off with that, so I'll just stick with that. But, yeah, we're going to have fun this week. I'm going to be on 4 days on the Tom Bernard Show. So that'll be a lot of fun this week. So you can check that out for yourself. Let me mention real quickly before we jump into the next story, Halloween for Hunger campaign. Guys, we're closing in. This is our last week. We're only at a little over $5,000 of our $15,000 goal. I want to say thank you. $5,000 is nothing to sneeze at. As a matter of fact, that was our goal last year, Tim. And remember, that was going to break records.
Yep.
I think our highest we'd ever gotten was around $3,500 before. So $5,000 is not a bad place to be. I would love to see this jump up and we hit that $15,000 goal. I just found out that there was a hiccup with their system that wouldn't accept $1, $2, $3, $4 increments.
Hmm.
They would only accept $5, $10, $20 and go up from there. But they have fixed that problem. So if you tried it and couldn't get on, please try it again. We're working with Second Harvest Heartland, which helps people right here in the United States that need food immediately. And for every $1 you donate, it supplies 3 meals to a person in need. If we can raise that $15,000 goal, we're going to supply 45,000 meals. And I know you guys are getting tired of hearing this, but let's keep showing them how much we care. The paranormal community is amazing, and I know that you guys can help us get there. $1 each, folks. That's all I'm asking, $1. You can find the banner at our darknessradio.com website. I know it's hard to find it through the phone version. So email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll shoot you a link. dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll shoot you the link, or keep following our social media pages. I will be posting this every day this week so that we can get up to that number of $15,000. So that's what's going on. I wanted to just drop that in the people's laps, let them know about that. Where are we going next, sir?
Is it Nopeming? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Nopeming.
It? Nopeming. Okay, yeah. I don't want these British people getting after me.
No, this isn't in Duluth, Minnesota.
It's in Duluth?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want these British people in Duluth, Minnesota getting after me.
I don't blame you, Tim.
The British are very uptight.
Yeah, but I don't think there's many up in Duluth.
It's northern, yeah. They act like they're up there.
Do they? Really?
Yeah,
I've been up there and I don't I don't feel like they ever act like they're English, Tim. I mean, they've got an accent. There's no doubt about that.
They sail right over from the Atlantic, right through Lake Superior.
Canada, that's Canada.
Is
Canada,
it?
It's, I guess it's a British
Canada
province or something.
Texas are right next to each other.
Yeah, got to be careful with this whole geography thing because I got a million emails about Asia last week because of you. Yeah.
Because of me?
Yeah.
What did I
said,
do?
No, Asia's its own continent. And I said,
it is a continent.
Right. But what was the other? I think it was, there was another country and I can't remember what it was. And I said, oh, I think that's part of Asia. And you said, no, it's separate from that. Now I can't remember what it was, but I got like 100 emails going, you two are morons. That's still part of Asia. So, and I looked it up and they were right, Tim. They were right.
I doubt it.
No, they were right. Unless they were able to pull the strings of Rand McNally and change the shifting of the world.
They can't deny that the Atlantic goes right into Lake Superior, and that's why there's so many British there in Duluth.
What?
I don't know.
All right. Where are we going?
Look one up.
No pemming. Anyway, go ahead. What's going on? This is pretty exciting.
Right.
I don't like to brag. Well, I kind of do. But I'm one of the ones that helped kick the door open to this place and make it kind of famous, Tim.
Did the cops arrest you?
No, I was working for Ghost Adventures for a short time.
Oh.
About 3-4 years.
You always tell us, get permission before you go in a building.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
don't just kick
and
the
I
door
did.
Open.
I did, but I contacted the owners, and they opened the doors to allow Ghost Adventures to do an episode there, which was really powerful. A lot of weird stuff caught on film, I guess. And now they're doing ghost hunts. But what's going on there?
Well, a lot of people died there, Dave. That's according to No Pemming. I mean,
not during ghost hunts, though. Fair warning.
No,
this was prior when it was a hospital.
Right, they've embraced their identity as a paranormal destination now. They've embraced it, Dave. They've opened up their loving arms and said, come here, you cuddly little ghost hunter, you.
Is that true?
I made that last part.
I thought so.
Yeah. There's an old rusted tricycle in a cold off-limits hallway in No Pemming. I learned how to say that. Lit by flashlight or phone. It's a creepy image like something from a horror movie. In an abandoned sanatorium that doesn't have electricity, running water, or heat. There is not specifically supernatural about its placement. Okay. Its presence is explainable. In recent years, people have come and people have gone, and there have been children on the property. However, sometimes the tricycle moves, not from here to there in front of an audience. These are confusing sentences. In some photos, it faces one direction, and in another, it furthers down the hall or facing a different direction.
Yeah, they're just saying that it doesn't always happen while you're watching it, but like you turn around to come back, and then it's pointing in a new direction.
I just wish I would have said that.
Yeah.
No Pemming project director Tanya Graysmark isn't going to make a haunted or not call on it, the trike, I guess. It's up to your imagination whether it's a person or paranormal thing, she said during a recent tour of the facility, located on about 40 acres off Interstate 35's Midway Road exit, right near England. Just saying.
No.
Okay. It has been about a year since No Pemming started offering tours as a way to raise money for much-needed repairs. Its keepers from Horizon Incorporated, a nonprofit organization, want to make it safe, fix the roof, and turn it into a usable space. The sanatorium was built in 1912 as a remote place for people who had been diagnosed with tuberculosis. In the early 1970s, it became a nursing home that was ultimately shut down in 2002 because of financial problems. It had become vacant for many years and a destination for trespassers, some of which are like Dave. He just went in and kicked the door down.
No, I just meant metaphorically. I was wanting to reach out to them to get them to open their doors the first time first official paranormal investigation.
I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Some who vandalized the property, like Dave over there.
No, I didn't. I've never even actually been there. Okay. I've just been on the phone with the owners.
All right, I'm sorry. It was briefly owned by a Twin Cities businessman who eventually went to prison for his role in a Ponzi scheme. Yikes.
Ponzi. I loved him on Happy Days.
He was good, wasn't he? Although when they jumped the shark, it was all over.
Yeah. Hey, I'm talking to Patsy Weber this week on the Tom Bernard Show.
Really?
Anson Williams.
Wow.
True story. Talk about a weird bookend to this conversation.
That is.
We're going to talk about drowsy driving. Did you know he's related to Dr. Heimlich?
Really?
Yeah, from the Heimlich maneuver.
Really?
Yeah.
So you figured
I'm kind of German. I thought I'd speak it with my accent.
You did a very good job.
Heimlich.
Yeah. So he literally could get you from behind and do the job.
True, right.
Yeah.
But he's also working on this drowsy driving program, and Anson Williams has become like one of the most public speakers on this. And, dude, it's frightening. I've had this experience driving home from KNSI Radio after doing Coast to Coast. You're the one that broke the news to me about these micro naps.
Yeah.
Because it terrified me. I couldn't figure out. I was driving down the road. Mm-hmm. feeling fine. All of a sudden, I'd jerk the wheel like I was falling asleep, and I'm like, my eyes are still open. Why did I do that?
I used to do that on the way home from college.
Terrifying. Yeah. Terrifying. But now he's got some answers. We're going to talk to him on the show. I might even bring him on our show because we have a lot of listeners that are doing this. They listen to the show while they're driving, especially late at night.
Right.
I would love for them to hear about this and the program and that there are safe alternatives that you can do to pumping up on caffeine, rolling down your window and, you know, blasting music. That doesn't work.
Right.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I digress. Go back to it now.
It's been a year since Nopeming started offering tours as a way to raise money for much needed repairs. It's keepers from Horizon, a nonprofit organization, want to make it a safe, fixed roof into a usable space and whatnot. They took ownership in 2009 with an eye towards turning it into a charter school. In the meantime, it's a destination. In addition to a historical tour and a night tour, this time of year they offer a haunted tour, and that plays on the facility's history. The appeal is obvious to Graysmark. He says she says this is a sanatorium, she said on Friday morning, and a lot of people have died here. The most popular ghost at Nopeming is a 9-year-old girl believed to be from the sanatorium era. Missy Phoebus of Paranormal Research Minnesota said attendees of her group's 4-hour late-night paranormal investigation classes held this month at Nopeming have heard the sound of a little girl giggling. There might be a photograph of her, a sheer image seemingly in a long gown in the same hallway as that tricycle. If it's real, it's a really, really cool picture, Phoebus said. On Sunday, Phoebus was fresh from an investigation the previous night where no one had physically encountered the little girl. But we think we spoke with her, she said. The investigators hadn't yet gone through their recordings, which detect things not accessible to the naked ear, to determine if the ghost reveals her name or her association with Nopeming. When the team from Ghost Adventures visited Nopeming for an episode of their Travel Channel series in 2015, they were fueled in equal parts by an on-site murder-suicide, a man who killed an orderly and himself on Mother's Day, in 1940, and Native American spirits. The episode, which is available for streaming online, includes disembodied voices, the ghost hunter's physical responses to the space, and various door slams and tugs from unseen forces. A crew of independent filmmakers recently spent a few months at Nopeming making a horror movie scheduled for a 2018 release. A few props remained on site during a recent tour. Ricky McManus of the Upper Minnesota Film Office said Northern Minnesota has become a destination for creatives working in that genre. She is charged with scouting locations with filmmakers. Nopeming has been a go-to stop in that search. What's the spookiest place you know, she asked rhetorically. There are areas where the hair on my neck stands up. As a location for a spooky movie, though, people are really pumped about it. Older Than America, a 2008 suspense drama about the effect of Native American boarding schools, was filmed in part at Nopeming. A recent daytime tour drew a mix of people whose pasts were entwined with the facility, whether a family member had worked or died there. Others were into history, architecture, or the paranormal. The tour started with a walk around the grounds, wound inside the building to an old chapel, patient rooms, the notorious hallway, and the auditorium. Without heat, the temperature drops inside the facility quite significantly, and without electricity, visitors are relying on cell phone flashlights. Without water, there were portable bathrooms available within the facility. Peeled paint hangs in flaps from the walls and like fringe from old pipes. Ceiling tiles have fallen or dangled between beams, and the stage is inches thick with dust, dirt, and debris. A toilet is muddied and rusted. Walls are scarred with cracks, and a tunnel between the main building and the steam room is no longer accessible. The iconic chimney, visible from the interstate, has tilted to a dangerous degree. It has become more cost-effective to board up the windows than replace the ones broken by trespassers, Graysmark went on to say. If the facility's history doesn't freak out a visitor, the black mold, asbestos, and lead-based paint chips just might. Mara Zahir, an exchange student from Pakistan, now living in St. Paul, was drawn to the tour because of her interest in horror and the paranormal. I'm so interested in things a human eye cannot see, the 16-year-old Zahir went on to say. Nopeming did not disappoint. Just beyond the caution tape, she witnessed an imprint of a human hand and was just the kind of thing she said she had hoped to see. There you go.
Yeah, we're trying to, I want to see if we can do an event up there. I think that'd be fascinating.
Well, you've already been to England twice this year, Dave.
No, this is in Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Duluth.
Right across
Duluth
the Atlantic.
Duluth is on fire. You know, we have another Minnesota story, and I don't know if you've gotten to it yet, but it's where the cops were in the graveyard.
Oh, yes, the deer poachers?
Yeah, let's find out about this.
Ah, here it is, yeah. Officers were searching a cemetery for deer poachers and ended up finding a couple of ghost hunters instead. We stay in Duluth, just right across the pond from England, where conservation officers were searching for deer poachers in a cemetery, but instead they found a couple of paranormal investigators. Twin Cities Pioneer Press reported that conservation officers Andy Schmidt and Kip Duncan... Boy, that is a conservation name, isn't it? Conservation officer Kip Duncan responded to a call about people shining deer. We do that up here, you know, or illegally using a spotlight to locate deer at night. Actually, on my way here, I saw a cop looking for inmates over at St. Cloud.
Did you really?
Penitentiary, yeah. Yeah, with the spotlight.
Well,
I did.
That's good news.
I mean, I'm not trying to freak you out, you know, but
it's great news. Yeah.
I did. I was on my way here and I saw a cop doing that for inmates. So they don't just do it for deer.
Creepy.
The two officers were staked out in a small cemetery close to midnight when they saw the gentleman shining a light. We were in the truck waiting for something to happen when this car pulled into the cemetery, Schmidt said. We could see they were using some sort of light, but it wasn't really a beam of light. It was a flashing on and off like a strobe. Schmidt and Duncan weren't
sure. They were having a rave out there.
They were. Then one had a glow stick in his mouth. It was really weird. Schmidt and Duncan weren't sure if the suspects were doing anything illegal, but they decided to find out what was going on. Schmidt goes on to say, so we pulled out to talk to them and they took off. We had to chase after them and hit them with the flashing lights out on the road.
Woo!
The suspects turned out to be two women who did not appear to be looking for deer. When we asked them what they were doing with the lights, they wouldn't tell us. They said we'd make fun of them, Schmidt said. The women eventually told them they were hunting for ghosts in the cemetery. That had to be a little embarrassing.
Did you ever used to play that game when you were a kid, Ghost in the Graveyard?
I did once or twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. She explained they were using their phone camera flash to spot ghosts. They said, you can't see ghosts with a normal light, that you have to use a flash, Schmidt said. I didn't realize ghosts only show up with flash. The women said they were using an app called Ghost Radar. Oh, ladies. Which advertises the original application designed to detect paranormal activity. They said it would allow you to see where the ghosts were that you couldn't see, Schmidt said. We told them to have fun, Duncan said, and then we laughed and laughed and laughed. We see all of it out there, but this is the first time we've stopped Ghostbusters or whatever you call them, Duncan added.
All right. Fun times in Minnesota.
There you go. So there's a lesson for you. Don't ever get caught in a cemetery with ghost radar.
All right. Where will we go next, sir?
It looks like we're staying on the ghost side of things with the ghost of a little boy in a picture taken in, I believe this is Teesside's most haunted building. Even the self-confessed skeptic who took the picture was shocked when he saw the image. The ghost of a little boy has been spotted in an image taken inside what is said to be one of Teesside's most haunted buildings. Reese Hugill, head doorman at Manhattan's pub in Stockton, was exploring the building with two others after paranormal investigators had taken a tour, but the self-confessed skeptic was shocked to find that a photograph he had taken seemed to include what looks like the image of a little boy. Manhattan's is said to be Stockton's most haunted building, said Reese. People have said there has been over 100 recorded deaths here. Others, like old owners and staff, have said that they have heard voices and seen things move. He added, I was showing a new member of security staff around the building, and I told him we had some mediums and paranormal investigators come and check out the place a few days prior. I was very skeptical about the whole idea of anything paranormal being real, so I offered to take one staff member and one regular customer upstairs just after midnight. We went all the way up to the top floor. Each floor got creepier and creepier. The other two also started to say it was very cold, which I shrugged off because the windows were old and cracked. But after Reese posted a photograph, which he took during the tour, he was soon inundated with messages and calls from people who had spotted something strange in the image. Looks like a young boy. You can even see his hair combed over, said one person on Facebook. Another wrote, does look like a little kid when you zoom right in like that. Reese said, I took a few videos and photos and then posted a picture onto Facebook, only to be met with messages and people ringing me saying they could see something in the picture. Everybody has said it's a little boy, which is strange because the investigators mentioned a young trapped spirit named Joshua. Reese, who said staff are now due to go on a ghost walk of the building, added, everybody is very frightened, but really excited to go up after dark again with investigators. But whether it's a ghost or just something like light coming in from the window or a pattern on the wall, I can't deny that it's one spooky place.
Very cool. And this reminds us that only the real stories and the scariest stories, Tim, are true. That's what Amazon Prime's exclusive series Lore has been telling us. It's a great program. If you haven't had a chance to see it, it's on Amazon Prime exclusive. It's a 6-episode series from an executive producer of The Walking Dead and executive producer of The X-Files based on the podcast phenomena that has over 70 million downloads, hosted and narrated by Aaron Mankey. And the 6 episodes, Tim, just listen to this lineup.
Okay.
One of the episodes is called Echoes. Which talks about Dr. Walter Freeman. He was the father of the ice pick lobotomy. He believed the 10-minute procedure would all but end the need for mental hospitals. And he has the best of intentions, Tim, but ends up creating an entirely new kind of horror story. That's one of these stories that they turn. And these are real stories, historical fact stories, that have morphed beyond the beliefs of urban legends. And they kind of meld into the supernatural world. Unboxed is another one. Listeners have been writing to me about this a lot. Robert Jean Otto, a child without friends, that is, until he receives a doll as a gift. He names the doll after himself, Robert, and they become fast friends. And soon the boy believes the doll is real. But to everyone else, Robert the doll is nothing more than a curse. And we've talked about Robert the doll. I've had a chance to see Robert the doll in person.
Mm-hmm.
I've been right there. It is really a freaky piece of history, and it's a great story. It'll give you the chills. I think that's one of the most nightmarish of the episodes. But then you've got a great one, the Black Stockings episode, right? And this is from 19th century Ireland, Tim, where the folklore has a strong hold. Michael Cleary is convinced his wife Bridget has been replaced by a fairy called a changeling, Tim. And his belief drives him to one of the most extreme acts. And if you've read anything about changelings, it's a creepy story. And if you, you know, again, you think in today's mindset, who would ever fall for these type of things, right?
Right.
But if you honestly believed that your loved one had been replaced by an evil doppelganger, and you were afraid that this being, this beast, was capable of real evil, what would you do? Would you just let it happen, or would you try to stop it?
That's a good question.
Right. Well, you can find out about that. And then this is a great one for Halloween, right? The Beast Within. Werewolves, of course, they've been all the rage in movies since the Twilight series kind of rebooted them.
Oh, yeah.
But they were once thought to be real. As a matter of fact, back in 1589, villagers in Bedburg, Germany, were convinced that a werewolf was killing women and children, only to discover that the killer was really one of their own. And I don't want to give away the ending, but this follows right into the Larry Talbot Wolfman storyline. It is really fascinating, really bizarre. I mean, this entire village was gripped in fear because of these murders. And this is a real part of history. And they believed it to be a werewolf. There was a transformation that took place. It's really a bizarre story, and it'll get your mind going. And that's what I love about lore. They take historical fact. They show you where some of the breakdown and some of the legend fits in and some of the reality and why people believed what they believed at these times in history. But then a lot of these stories leave you scratching your head wondering what really went on. And then they made a tonic. So you've got a Wolfman story, right? They made a tonic is the story of Mercy Brown, the New England vampire. One of the most famous real-life historic vampire accounts, or so they say, in history. But he goes into this pretty deeply to explain to you why there was this belief system in our country in the 1800s and early 1900s that vampires really existed. And that, you know, a lot of people credit Bram Stoker with the creation of vampires. vampires have been around for centuries.
Oh, yes.
Different variations and varieties. As a matter of fact, they even refer to them in some of the hieroglyphs from Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about these beings that would drain you of your life force and blood. So this is a very unique story, but it ties into historical accuracy of what was going on with diseases at the time and why people believed in vampires, especially when you dig up a body and it looked a specific way, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how would you feel if suddenly, mysteriously, one of your family members passes away of a horrible disease? Then all of a sudden, other family members who were relatively healthy start wasting away. And you go, you dig up the grave of that loved one that passed away, and you find them months later looking fresh. There's still some blood, fresh blood trickling out of their mouth. You take the body out, you open it up, and there's the heart. Months later, still fresh blood in the heart. You could see why people believed in vampires, right?
Yeah.
What would you do?
I'd freak out a little.
Right, wouldn't
yeah.
you? Well, they go into the scientific explanation of what was going on and why this belief was so prevalent at that time. It's a great series. I really can't say enough about it. Check out Lore. It's a great little six-part anthology, chilling series. And you can find more information at amazon.com/lore, L-O-R-E. It's exclusively on Amazon Prime Video. Started here this October on Friday the 13th. Check out all six episodes. You're going to love it. And then do me a favor, rate them. If you love the episodes, rate them, review them, let them know. Because if you like programming like this, the only way you're going to get more is by letting the powers that be know that you are enjoying those type of programs. All right, where are we going next in the world of supernatural news?
We're going to a ghost sighting and paranormal activity at a 100-year-old inn called the Aurora Inn in Ohio.
Okay.
For close to 100 years, the staff at the Aurora Inn in Aurora has entertained and hosted guests along what used to be called a stagecoach trail. Paul Newman, not that Paul Newman, Dave. Oh, it is that new Paul
it
Newman.
It is that Paul Newman.
Oh, I thought it wasn't. Oh, it is.
There you go.
And Rosemary
thinking,
Clooney.
Just
not
be
that,
pretty
not
and stop
that
thinking,
Rosemary
Tim.
Clooney, Dave.
No, it is that Rosemary Clooney.
It is
Clooney.
That Rosemary Clooney.
It's the aunt of the George Clooney.
Get out of here.
It's true, Tim.
Are among some of the hotel's most noteworthy guests. They lived in Ohio, Dave?
Well, no, but they stopped at the inn.
Oh,
yeah.
Just for the night together?
I can't. I can neither confirm nor deny those reports,
Tim.
What
did Paul Newman's wife say about that?
I don't know. Maybe she was holding the camera.
Oh, that's
true. Wow, that's horrible.
Yeah.
No.
Well, she might have directed the film.
Could be.
With the exception of a fire in 1963, the inn had a pretty normal past. However, longtime bartender Diane Swarren will tell you that she experienced something paranormal.
Was she angry?
Why was she Swarren
all the time? Yeah.
She said, heard some noise in the bar, turned around. There was a female ghost standing at that wall right there, she said as she pointed. She had a long powder blue dress on, white apron, a bonnet like back in the 1900s, and she just stood there and stared, and then she disappeared. Years later, that ghost came back. Diane went on to say, all of a sudden, these lights started flickering, and here she was standing right by the light switch, flipping the light switch on and off. And I looked at her, and I told her to go back to her room, and she did. She disappeared again. It was like a fading image. Maybe she was fascinated by electricity.
Could be.
When the hotel underwent major renovations beginning in 2014, some employees said there were some strange things happening along an upstairs corridor. Steve Mansfield is one of the inn's owners. He went on to say that these two rooms, this area had been where lights have flickered, doors have shut, and just about some paranormal and just some abnormal activity reported by our housekeeping staff. And then oddly enough, as Mansfield gave me a tour and showed me one of the inn's finest suites, something completely unexpected happened, said the author of the article. Mansfield noticed a picture was missing from the wall. Housekeeping had no idea what may have happened to the picture, and Mansfield also had trouble with his phone throughout the tour. Is it an odd coincidence or something supernatural? Well, that would be up to you to decide. The Aurora Inn is actually hosting Zombie Fest coming up this Saturday.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I like that. Is that this Saturday, meaning this past Saturday?
This past Saturday.
Yeah. Well, our listeners are not time travelers, Tim. They're not time travelers.
Well, they should be.
Yeah. But there is a time traveler story for us to look at. How about that? You like that little lead-in?
I was going to save it for last, but
okay. But it's a good lead-in.
Well, yeah.
All right. Where are we going?
I guess I'll take it if you're going to get it.
Sure.
Sure. An ex-policeman says he's traveled through time in a church. Haven't we all? I think I've fallen asleep and went back about 10, 20 years in my dreams. And I did that as an altar boy, Dave.
Wow.
I'm telling you. A former detective believes he may have once traveled through time in a church. Oh, sure. We've all done it from time to time. Chris Halton, who is a field intelligence officer. Oh, I just saw him in Chicago. And plainclothes investigator for Essex Police detailed the extraordinary incident to a stunned conference audience. Mr. Halton runs the paranormal YouTube channel, Haunted Earth TV, and films himself at historical locations, looking at their history and any paranormal events. Chris is also known as the man in the hat due to his trademark accessory that he wears. He said that while filming one episode in a church, he felt as though he had traveled through time.
Well, and you had a chance to actually see Chris Halton. We've seen him the last 2 years at the Chicago Con, and he's got a fascinating take on the paranormal. I'm always interested to see what he has to say.
That he does.
And what he has to share, but to especially kind of digging into the fact that he believed that going through this paranormal investigation, he actually almost, I guess he's saying he kind of stepped through a portal in time to get a glimpse and glimmer of what it was like.
Yep. He told the Paraforce UK conference in Essex of his experience. He said, I had been in the church and felt uncomfortable. Through my eyes, I could see the church changing like there was a tapestry on the wall, flashing like I was going back through time. He said, I felt like I was sucked into this, which is kind of unusual. He also went on to say, I mentioned it on camera that I felt like I was going through a time observation on history. Chris then said he did not change locations during the experience and remained in the modern day once it was over. Time travel is yet to be possible, and scientists say one would need to travel it faster than the speed of light for it to be potentially happening, at least physically. Mr. Halton also attempts to make contact with ghosts in his videos and claims to have communicated with the dead. So there you go.
All right. How many more stories do we have here?
Just one.
One more, and then we're going to dip into the world of Parashare. But what have we got going on, Tim?
This has to do with a potential alien terror. Man stared at by crew of bizarre triangle UFO hovering over a crop field. It's like the perfect UFO haunting, Dave. There you go. Yeah. A man has told how time stopped after he locked eyes with the crew of a bizarre triangular UFO he claims to have seen hovering over a field. Philip Shepherdson has revealed the encounter he says he experienced near York in North Yorkshire. He was driving a scooter on country lanes near Easingwold? Yeah. When he turned left near Hubie and was distracted by something. He was driving a scooter on country lanes when he turned left and was distracted by something. I read it twice. It's just as nice the second time around. He said, I looked to my left and my heart flipped at what I saw. Hovering at a corner of a small field was a black triangular-shaped object. I stopped to get a better look, not believing at what I was seeing. Triangle UFOs are once of the most commonly reported.
Ones of the most commonly, I think is what they meant to say.
Particularly in the United States, where hundreds are seen each year. Some truth seekers believe they are alien spaceships, while others believe that they are top secret craft built by governments in experimental projects. Mr. Shepherdson added the object was smooth with no control surfaces and no sharp edges, and at the top was a cockpit with a figure inside of it. All I could see was a black-shaped helmet and black overall of some kind. By the side of the craft, I now realized that there were two more slim-looking figures who, too, wore black overalls, and they were trying to push the vehicle into the next field, perhaps to conceal it among the standing crop. They abruptly stopped to look in my direction, the cockpit figure, too, and they turned to gaze at me. I felt transfixed with fear. I was shaking, and the silence was stifling as we gazed at each other, and I felt some form of contact taking place, but I just don't know what that was. And at that point, time appeared to stop. One of the most infamous triangle UFO mass sightings was the Phoenix Lights incident over the Arizona City in 1997. Some of the witnesses later reported experiencing memory loss, a strange sense of calm that made them not discuss the sighting with anyone else. Mr. Shepherdson spoke of a similar experience after seeing this UFO. He added, suddenly my mind couldn't take anymore, and I got on my bike and took off to work. I don't remember getting there. In fact, everything after that seems surreal. I appeared to forget the experience as if told that this was something that I shouldn't have witnessed. What struck me at the time was that this was nuts and bolts technology, no fuzzy lights with a smudgy image. I freaked at the fact that an aircraft floating like a silent kite with not a blade of grass out of place and without jets was way beyond our technology. The event took place in February of 1979, but only now was Mr. Shepherdson having the courage to come forward and seek out other witnesses. He said, I know it's a long time since my encounter, but I would like to take this opportunity to appeal to other possible witnesses to this event to come forward. I have often wished that I had approached the farmer on whose land that happened, but I never did. Who knows? Perhaps there's something out there who saw this like I did, and they too have waited all this time and have said nothing. If you think you saw it or have other triangle UFO experiences, they have an email address here. It's john.austin@express.co.uk.
Hey, it is Halloween tomorrow, and we are bringing the goods. Tomorrow on Beyond the Darkness, we have an episode of True Crime Tuesday Revisited. Tim, we're revisiting one of our favorite cases, the youngest serial killer in Canada's history, and her 400-year-old werewolf boyfriend.
Oh, I remember that one. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. This is a bizarre and chilling story you need to tune in and check out. Vampires and werewolves and covens and murder. You'll have to hear that tomorrow on True Crime Tuesday Revisited here on Beyond the Darkness and on our True Crime Tuesday podcast, Tim. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Mary Jane's ghost.
Ooh.
Right? Yeah. Fascinating topic. Summer of 1948 in the scenic remote river town of Oregon, Illinois, a young couple visiting the local Lover's Lane, Tim, is murdered. The shocking crime garners headlines from Portland, Maine to Long Beach, California, but after a sweeping manhunt, no one is arrested, and the violent deaths of Mary Jane Reed and Stanley Skirdla fade into time's indifference. Well, when we fast forward 50 years, eccentric entrepreneur Michael Arians moves to Oregon, opens a roadhouse, gets elected mayor, and becomes obsessed with the crime. He comes up with a scandalous conspiracy theory and starts to believe that Mary Jane's ghost is haunting his establishment. He also reaches out to the Chicago Tribune for help. This sounds like something from a horror novel.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real story.
Really?
Mary Jane's ghost. We're going to talk about that tomorrow on True Crime Tuesday. We'll be back. We've got more coming your way. Your stories featured next on Parashare.
Beyond the Darkness.
Hey, we're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Do us a favor. If you're listening to us via iTunes, please go rate and review the show. That helps out our show immensely. So rate and review it if you are part of the iTunes Nation. If you're listening to our show through our app, make sure that you go to the Google Play Store and rate and review the app as well. That'll push it up in the numbers. More people will find the show. We can continue to blow up our army of darkness to eventually take over the world, Tim.
Oh, wow. The world?
Is that too much to ask for? Is it?
No.
I was overstepping my boundaries.
I was going to give it up for Lent, but I guess not.
Trying to take over the world?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Just for 40 days.
Dear Tantalizing Tim and Swell Schrader.
Yay. Hey.
I don't think I like the taste of that in my mouth. As far as the paranormal goes, I have a lot of little and seemingly unrelated things that I have seen or been a part of. It's hard to know where to start, but since this is for Parashare, I suppose it makes the most sense to begin with ghosts and proceed from there. Well, if you say so, we'll take your word for it. Who am I to question you? You know your story better than I do. All right. I'm positive the house I grew up in was haunted. It took me a long time to come to this definite realization of such because it was easy to just dismiss in passing as a trick of the mind or an overactive imagination. After having a conversation with my sister a few years ago, 5+ years after either one of us had moved out of that childhood home, it became undeniable. My first true experience with the ghost in that home was chilling at the same time, and looking back, I'm not sure how I ever convinced myself to dismiss it. I was about 9 and had somehow coerced my mom into letting me sleep on the couch for the night so I could stay up late to watch some TV show. Her one big stipulation was that I could not tell my sister, who is 3 years my junior. And it was she was too young, and my mom didn't want to deal with that meltdown of a jealous 6-year-old. Now, as a 9-year-old with free range does, I stayed up way later than I had bargained for and was flipping through channels to find something other than infomercials to watch, when out of nowhere and all at once, I heard huge footsteps coming from the opposite side of the house, from down the hall where the bedroom was. My 9-year-old mind immediately went to my mom, telling me not to let my little sister know about our arrangement for that night and that this was my sister coming towards me down the hall, so I had to act fast. I clicked off the TV and pulled the blanket up over my head and caught my breathing. She definitely wouldn't catch me. But then I listened closer, and red flags began going off in my head. The footsteps were really loud and out of place. They sounded as though a big man in work boots was coming towards me. I listened to them breach the kitchen from the hall and make a beeline towards me. Now, I'm a little kid panicking, doing my best to keep quiet while simultaneously trying not to move or cry. The footsteps came directly to where my head was on the couch, and they stopped. But I was shrouded in a thick blanket for protection, so I saw nothing. I got up the courage to peek out from behind the blanket and, to my surprise, terror, and relief, no one was there. A lot of other things went on in that house, but nothing too terrifying. Oh, then that sucks. We want the scary stuff. Yeah. Let's just dump this. No, I'm just kidding. nothing too terrifying or creepy. You always felt like you were being watched from specific spots in the house. You'd hear water running where there was no one near any sink or any otherwise. Doors would open and close on their own, you know, typical haunting type stuff. Nothing spectacular. As I said, I wasn't confident I wasn't just nuts until I had a conversation with my sister a few years ago, where we both fessed up to having many similar experiences in that house. Since moving out of that house, I'm pretty sure I personally am haunted, but honestly, that's another story. The short of it is that every house or apartment I move into seems to be haunted in some way or another. So I just kind of feel like it's me, not the places. But you'll have that, right? The next topic I'd like to give you a story or two for is UFOs. On 5 separate occasions now, I've seen UFOs. Each time I've seen them, I had been with at least one other person and have never been to the point out. I've never been able to be the one to point out what we're seeing first, nor have any of these people been repeats, always different people that I've seen them with. Also, as a disclaimer, I don't do drugs and I very rarely drink, so none of these are related to the altered states of mind. The first encounter, if you will, was very much the most impressionable, not just because of the obvious paradigm shift that seeing a UFO causes, but because it remains the only time I saw more than one UFO at once. It was the summer of 2007. I was just about 17 and hanging out with 2 friends. We'll call them John and Brittany. So we ended up going back to John's apartment community to hang out at his place. I drove, John was riding shotgun, and Brittany was in the back of the van. We parked and hopped out, and Brittany and I began walking towards John's building. John, however, was glued to a spot just outside of the van and facing the opposite direction than that of his apartment building. I think it's probably important to note 2 things. That we live in Cincinnati, Ohio, so it's a city with a decent amount of buildings and people around at most times, and that it's only around 5 p.m. and the lights are still out. So we both look at what John is looking at on the horizon in the distance. We ask him, "What's up?" And all he could do was point. There, above the horizon, were 5 good-sized bright white orbs. Brittany and I froze, and the 3 of us just stood there in awe at whatever we were seeing. And to this day, I'm not sure. They were moving slowly at first, but in nonsensical patterns and directions like nothing any of us had ever seen. Then, one just blinked out and it was gone. Another followed suit, and there were only 3. But then the first 2, in different points of the sky, reappeared together. It was crazy. We watched these orbs for what seemed like an hour, until they all eventually just disappeared. Not flew away, just were no longer there. We were never able to find any information about what we had seen. Was it a UFO, weather balloon, or otherwise? It was mind-changing, that's for sure. The other UFO stories are relatively similar, save for one. I had just walked out of my house with my friend Annie, and we were going down the outside stairs to the driveway. We were talking and laughing when out of nowhere, we heard a loud sound that can only be related to something like a blowtorch, but much more high-pitched. We both whipped our heads up to the source of the sound above my house to witness a silver saucer speeding off to a pinpoint, and then it vanished. I'll wrap up with my last bit of paranormal, and this one I've documented in multiple videos. I'm one of the people who causes SLI, street light interference, and am able to consciously turn on street lights with my thoughts. I also turn them off from time to time, but you have no control over that phenomena as of yet. I know how absolutely crazy I sound, which is why I've documented myself turning them on via video more than once. If you'd like to see the videos, just let me know. They're nothing spectacular, but they're proof nonetheless. Anyhow, thanks for reading this. Whether or not it makes it onto the show, it makes my day to know I have the opportunity to reach out to such amazing people. Keep on keeping on, and that comes from Eliza Barham. Well, thank you, Eliza. Interesting stories. A little jealous, Tim. She's got a lot of stuff going on.
Well, now if she can make Christmas lights chase to the beat of music. Now, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I'll take a video of that.
Good evening, Dave and Tim.
Good evening.
When I was growing up in southern West Virginia, we would go camping on the New River every summer and fish. My family has connections to the land in the area dating back to the 1700s. They were some of the earliest folks to live there that were not Native Americans. I remembered a story I used to hear about a trip some of my ancestors took that had an interesting twist in it. The land is the area, or in the area, is old, and by that I mean it has that old feeling. You feel the blood in the dirt. I believe that's how you put it. I wrote this in the style of first-person journal entry. October 18th, 1854. The summer had been viciously hot and dry on the New River in Western Virginia. We're still in a 2-year drought, which was the contributing factor to the trip Josiah and I took. We lost our last 2 milk cows to the heat, and a fox killed 4 of our 7 chickens. We traveled through 30 miles to Glen Lynn to buy 2 head of milk cows, roosters, and some other provisions to can food for the winter. With the heat of the summer, the farm didn't yield as much. It was going to be a rough winter. Upon returning to the farm, we took the roads along the bottoms that ran along the river as to the water the horses and cattle so we could water the horses and cattle during the trip. The temperatures were very hot this one day, and I remember sitting under a tree for shade and still sweating. We were passing through a small patch of forest that connected 2 large fields. We make out a clearing coming up, but a strange haze was drifting through the trees and coming closer to Josiah and me. And we passed into the haze, the horses became noticeably spooked, and we realized by the smell that it was a fire. When we got to the clearing, the smoke had thickened to the point where we could only see the path ahead. I remember the look on Josiah's face, and he was very concerned. We had made it halfway through the field. The best I could tell, that's when we started hearing babies crying and women frantically yelling and screaming. Every now and again, we would catch a glimmer or a glimpse of shadows running just over the outskirts of the clear view. With all of the chaos, we decided to make it past the smoke and return in the morning to help whoever it was. We made camp that night and woke at first sunlight. We tied the cattle up and left the wagon and made our way back to the field on horseback. When we reached the field, we were stunned. There were no structures, no camps. The field was completely normal. There were no signs of fire that anyone has ever, or that anyone had ever even been there. It was just as though nothing had ever happened. We made haste back to camp and loaded up quickly to return home. Father had been worried about about us because we were supposed to return the night before and asked what had taken us. We were still confused, but told him the story. He said his father had talked about a camp of Cherokee that lived there in the end of the 1700s. A group of soldiers fighting for John Sevi were heading west and came across the camp. The men of the tribe were hunting, and the soldiers killed every woman and child. They then burned the camp to the ground and went on their way. We never passed through that field again. May God rest their souls. Hope you like the story. Love your show. Take care. And that comes from John Wiley. I like that. Writing it as though it's a journal entry from back then. That's pretty original thinking, Tim.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Speaking of original thinking, Tim, it's our Halloween for Hunger campaign. And though that's not original, you can be. You can open your heart and your wallet and help us help our friends right here in the United States. Second Harvest Heartland is one of the biggest food shelf and service delivery companies in the world. Because of their buying power, every $1 we raise will supply 3 meals to one person in need.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could please find it in your heart to make a donation. Our goal this year is $15,000. We're barely over $5,000. We have a long way to go and a short time to get there. Come on now. Now watch old Bandit run, Tim. Sorry, I got a little Jerry Reed running through my skull. Anyway, here's what you can do. Go to darknessradio.com. Darknessradio.com. Click on the Halloween for Hunger banner. If you can't find it on our website through your mobile app, then just contact me directly, dave@darknessradio.com, and I will send you the link. Again, that's dave@darknessradio.com. We need your help, folks. Halloween's almost upon us. We've only got 1 week left of doing this drive, and we need to raise $10,000. We can do that with your help. Please help us get to that goal. All right, let's get back to a couple more stories, shall we, Tim? Because hi, Dave. My name is Alina, and I'm 28. I'm originally from Russia, but moved to the U.S. when I was 5. I currently live about an hour from Chicago. I've been listening to your show for a couple of years, and I love everything about it. I always look forward to it. I thought I'd write in and share a few stories of my own. Feel free to use them in any of your episodes. All right, we will. How about if we use them in this episode, Tim?
Okay.
I'll call them Life's Mysteries. I'm a firm believer certain dreams and nightmares mean something, and in rare cases may warn you of what to expect later in life. I vividly remember my very first nightmare from when I was 4 years old. It began as a dream that quickly turned sinister. I saw an isolated doll carriage. Being a small child and naturally curious, I walked up to look inside. As I got closer, a hand flew out and pulled me in with such force that I had no time to react. I woke up traumatized, not knowing what it was all about. Today, I believe that nightmare symbolized my future. I always felt I was weaker than everyone around me due to a form of muscular dystrophy, but I didn't see my life ending up in a wheelchair coming. I don't have a single recollection of having any other nightmares prior to that one, and I don't recall having any others until exactly 3 years later. I was already living in the U.S. As I was growing up, I had countless nightmares, most of them were the common type that everyone has, like falling, having the walls closing in on you, and getting chased by someone. I was 6 years old when I had a nightmare I'll never forget. It felt very real. I was sitting up in bed, not sure why I was awake, because I knew I had been asleep just a minute ago. I was looking around my old bedroom, and a black mass figure caught my eye. I froze, not believing my vision. He sat on the floor directly in front of the door. His head was bowed down, and he was completely still. I tried not to move and not to breathe, terrified that he would lift his head and look up. It felt like I sat there a long time staring at this mysterious being. I remember closing my eyes in hope he would be gone when I opened them next. Next thing I know, it's morning, and the figure's no longer there. I ran to my mom's room to tell her someone had been in my room. She told me it was just a bad dream, and I pushed it out of my mind, telling myself the same thing. As I got older, I heard of the shadow people phenomenon, attempted to figure out what my childhood nightmare meant, if anything. I found that if a child sees a black figure, it serves as a warning. The warning is normally a rough road ahead of endless struggles. Nothing close occurred since until the night of my 24th birthday. I had a somewhat similar nightmare as I did when I was a child, but much more intense. I found myself sitting up in my bed again, and it felt like I was being attacked by something I couldn't see. The window curtains were violently swaying back and forth, and I was levitating off my bed. I was desperate to make it stop and searched for a prayer in my head. The first one that immediately came to my mind was Michael the Archangel. The chaos calmed down. As soon as I looked up, there was a tall shadow figure, darker than the darkness in my room, wearing what looked like a hat, standing in front of my bed. I was in disbelief. What was I seeing? I couldn't hear his voice, but I got a message telepathically saying that nobody can help me. He stood there for a minute or two longer, then just disappeared. I've never seen him again. I tried to make sense of it the next day. I went to bed with my new cross earrings that night, which I'd never done before. And the fact that it was my birthday made me wonder if that set me up for a spiritual attack. I wish I knew the exact truth, but sometimes I ask myself, do I really want to know? Maybe you can help me interpret some of these experiences somehow, Dave. I would greatly appreciate it. I can't, Lina. I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm not a dream interpreter. Although I do play one on TV in this year's CBS series, Dave the Dream Interpreter. Make sure you check it out every Thursday and Wednesday night in succession, Tim. Backwards. It's kind of an Inception thing.
I see.
I don't know. I really don't know. I'm sorry I couldn't give you a better answer than that, but sounds creepy, and I'm glad I'm not you. Is that the wrong thing to say to somebody?
That is the wrong thing, yeah. Well,
but at least I'm being honest. That's an important part of my life. Hi, Dave and Tim. I've been a huge fan of the show since you guys were on Talk is Jericho. I wanted to share an experience I had while going on a private ghost hunt with a Pittsburgh area paranormal investigation team. A group of us had gone on a couple of public events with the team, but my wife scheduled a private hunt as a birthday present a few days before my birthday with the team. We visited the Greene County Historical Society, a location that the paranormal team called one of their most active places to investigate. Throughout the night, we heard unexplained knocks throughout the building, EVPs on the digital recorder, relevant responses on the ovulus, and one female in the group felt she was being touched a couple of times. By the time the night ended, I thought it was a cool experience, but was a little let down for the statement of one of the most active locations. I know you cannot predict and expect a lot when doing investigations, but what happened next made the night totally worth it. Behind the Historical Society was a small building that was used as a library. The team had previous experiences with a young red-headed child. When doing a walkthrough to check out the building before trying an experiment, the ovulus, which I was holding, said the name Jim, who is my stepfather, who was standing right next to me. Shortly then after, we all gathered around a table and had some toys on the table, and the team hooked up the portal device, which looked and sounded like the Geo box that is used on some of the TV shows. The lead investigator did a quick hello to the spirits and said, "Do you know we are all here as a special occasion for someone?" And the portal replied by saying my name, Sean. The next question was, what is the special occasion we're here for? And a faint birthday came through the portal. How old is Sean today? And the response was 28, which was not accurate. I was turning 31. The interesting part was that my friend at the table pointed out my actual birthday is the 28th, which was not the date we went on the ghost hunt. Before the next question was asked, I felt something emotional just come over me, and I was on the verge of tears that I could not explain. The next question was, do you know Sean? And a flashlight lit on the table. What's your name? Was then asked, and a friend, the lead investigator who were closest to the portal, could hear two voices saying the name Bill. I had two grandfathers named Bill who passed away within the past 6 years. I began feeling a tingle on the back of my neck, and I was still very emotional at this point. A crazy part of the whole situation is I had a dream about my grandfather that morning, and in the dream, I hugged him and slapped the back of my neck like a grandfather would do. I asked him, "Did you know you showed up in my dream this morning?" And the flashlight lit up. All of a sudden, the emotional feeling that had taken over me and the tingling on my neck went away. And I decided not to say anything to anyone in the room to see what happened to the activity. As soon as the feeling was gone, the activity was completely quiet, and we decided to end the night on that note. The investigators that took us said that they have never done a private or public event that touched on such an emotional level with someone in the group. I'm a little upset that we did not have a recorder going at the time, but it's also cool to have that memory of my paps. Thank you so much for taking your time reading this. And that comes to us from Sean. Well, Sean, thank you very much for sharing that story and that very personal and moving story as well. All right, we will wrap up with this, our final story tonight on Parashare Monday. Hello, Dave and Tim. My name is Ruben, and I live in Turlock, California. There's not such a creepy story, but a paranormal story nonetheless. My wife and I had brought my father home to care for him, and we were lucky enough to have him with us until he passed away shortly after he came to live with us. Well, we live in a two-story apartment complex, and the year after my father passed away, a couple with kids moved into the apartment below us. The floors are very thin, and you can hear yelling from the apartment below or from above. We could always on quiet nights hear a kid laughing and giggling and then the parents yelling at them to get to bed. Well, one night, a couple downstairs and my wife and I decided to get together and go out for some drinks. I can't remember exactly how we got into the conversation, but they had asked us if we knew that if anybody had seen any type of ghost or if anybody had died. At that point, my wife and I looked at each other and said, yes, my father was passed away, and I asked why. They asked us if we've heard the kids giggling late at night, and I was yelling at them to go to bed. And my wife and I both responded, yes, we heard them, and we always laugh because it would remind us of when we raised our kids. What can make the story shorter? One day, the father asked the kids why they would giggle so much in the room, and they said that a silly man would stick his face through the roof and make faces at them. Now, here's the other part that makes this believable. They were under the room that my father passed away in. At times, I feel like somebody's in the apartment. I see my dog stare down the hallway as if somebody was there, and I believe my father is still with us. And at this point, I would also like to ask you, if you know anybody within the area who can help me if my father is still here to move on, we're fine, we miss him, we love him, but we believe it's time for him to move on. We appreciate any help you could give us. Your friend, Ruben. Well, Ruben, I think if you just say that out loud to your dad, if it's your dad, tell him, you know, Dad, I love you. Thank you for being a part of my life. I'm glad that we got to spend these last hours and days together. But now it's your time to go on. You deserve this. Go to the light. Be reunited with your family and friends and loved ones that went before you. And just ask for that to happen. And you may be surprised. Once they feel that release and know that you don't need them and you're okay now, that may be exactly what they need to help push them out the door. So I hope that gives you an answer that makes you comfortable and healthy and happy. Thank you very much for sharing your story. I want to thank everybody else out there for sharing their stories with us. And remember, you can email in your paranormal encounters to dave@darknessradio.com. dave@darknessradio.com. And if you want to be very descriptive and just tell me you'd like this as part of Theater of the Mind, write it like you hear the episodes of Theater of the Mind. Give us a very descriptive account of one of your paranormal experiences, and you never know, Tim and I might feature it on a Friday with sound effects and dramatic reading and music and make it part of our show on Fridays. Thank you again for being a part of our show. Listen and always share the show. Rate and review us on iTunes to help us out. And if you're listening to us on our app through Droid, make sure you go to the Google Play Store and rate and review that. Make sure you keep updating the app as well, checking it out, because within the next week, we're going to be updating the app. We'll have some new features, some new things additional found on there. So just go check it out for yourself. You can get that if you're a Droid user by going to the Google Play Store and look up Darkness Radio. We'll be back tomorrow with a special True Crime Tuesday Revisited, where we talk about the youngest serial killer in Canada and her 400-year-old werewolf boyfriend. And tomorrow night on True Crime Tuesday, we've got a brand new episode, The Ghost of Mary Jane. It's a real story. It's chilling. It's compelling. You got to check it out. And remember, everybody that signs up for True Crime Tuesday between now and November 22nd is automatically entered into a drawing. And on my birthday, we're going to draw three names. You may win a one-year paid subscription to the best in True Crime Talk Radio. Don't hesitate. Don't wait. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.